Welcome back to Relatively Damaged by Damaged Parents. Today we have Kathleen Putnam with us. She is the founder of Nutrition Works, and she's also a trauma dietitian and the co-founder of Gentle Passage Doula Collective. She's the co-host of Challenging Conversations and a holding space consultant, sacred passage end-of-life doula, and a certified end-of-life grief coach. She brings in the art of holding space, safe guidance, and compassionate decision making with her clients. She's trained in mindfulness, self-compassion, trauma-informed practices. She's also an educator, coach, and healthcare provider, providing compassionate care and trauma-informed practices to her group's mentorship, nutrition practice, and end-of-life clientele. You can find her at nomorefoodtrauma.com. Hey everyone, Angela Talent here, host of the Relatively Damaged podcast. I'm the author of Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent. As you may know, Cicero once said, a room without books is like a body without a soul. Well, I say a soul without poetry hasn't lived. Buy my book on Amazon, Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent. Do you feel like a meditation failure? I know I did until I tried the iOS Breath and Heart app put together by the good people over at the Institute for Applied Meditation. I kept hearing about the benefits of meditation and was frustrated because I just couldn't sit there noticing my breath for any length of time. Thank goodness there's more than one type of meditation. I'm so glad this worked for me. Will it work for you? I don't know. Download the app and try it out. Breath and Heart. From I Am Heart. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Oh, I'm so excited. I mean, and that wasn't even it. You've taught in higher education for over 20 years. Right. You also supervise, mentor, and you're a preceptor for graduate students in the field of nutrition. And you were the public speaker for the commencement of the graduating class at Best Year in 2022.
Right.
You are a busy woman.
Well, there's lots to do right now. That's what I have to say. And it's easy to get bored sometimes, you know, the learning curve and keeping your ear to the ground for what people need. And right now people need a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people need a lot right now. What do you mean by that? That just seems so open-ended to me. What are you finding?
Well, I think that the isolation, because of the last few years, people are feeling really lonely. And now people are starting to actually realize that that's scientifically based, that loneliness is a risk factor and that stress is a risk factor. And historically, we always knew that. I think everybody who works with anyone, students, healthcare, you know, anything, that stress is a big problem. But now we have so much data, and that loneliness and isolation and really realizing our go-tos weren't so accessible, including our community, being able to see family and friends, take vacation, all that kind of self-care type of sustaining that a lot of us got used to, as well as just our regular routines, right? Being able to go to a gym, being able to jump on an airplane. So the instability, I think, has caused a lot of need.
So do you think, because I know we're here to talk about struggle, and I'm just wondering, do you think that all of that quiet time may have helped kind of stir up some of those traumas that maybe weren't, I don't know if assimilated, integrated, any one of those words might work, but it throughout life, that now that's showing up because of that quiet time?
I do. And I think if we don't have the coping skills and if we didn't have ways of managing it other than our go-tos, potentially some of our coping mechanisms got worse. So in the field of nutrition, we definitely saw people drinking more, eating more, potentially exercising more, you know, so it's, if we have a coping mechanism that's not real balanced, there was a risk and a potential for it getting even more imbalanced. And for those of us who had a relatively good routine or we were managing okay, because of the last few years, maybe some of those things started to pop up. because the stress got higher or the instability knocked us off track.
Mm-hmm. The stress, when you're talking about stress, I'm thinking it's not the good stress. It's things that are overwhelming or frustrating.
Yeah. And when you think about managing stress, it's being able to cope. So when we're overwhelmed, it's when we don't have enough coping mechanisms in place to be able to contain it without doing some kind of harm, either to ourselves or someone else or both. And so it's not being able to match the stressors that are coming. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how would someone know? I mean, maybe they think they're doing well, but from the knowledge and perspective and insight that you have, maybe they're not. What would they look for if they're not doing well in managing that stress?
Right. So I think really for people who are in tune, they don't feel right. Their body doesn't feel right. They're worried about their mind. They're overthinking, you know, ruminating, or they're having a lot of regrets, future tripping, okay, worried about the future, not being able to sleep, not being able to eat, overeating, drinking, kind of finding those escapes. So moving back and forth between feeling depressed and lethargic to feeling really anxious potentially. And so it can show up for people in different ways. So we have some objective stuff where we can see the scale go up. We can see our clothes don't fit. We can see our bills are mounting because we're spending too much on, Netflix or alcohol. So there's objective data. And then there's just also the subjective data about my stomach's in knots all the time. I'm having loose stools. So it could show up in a lot of, I'm having rashes, so it could be all kinds of things for different people. Okay. And it could be multiple things. Yep.
So ultimately then someone's got to be aware of how they're feeling. And I mean, I'm thinking most people are somewhat aware, but maybe want to deny it.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that we're always talking about the children and how it's impacting the children and how it's impacting adults and our parents and the elderly. And I think we have to take into account developmental, ability and capability. I have a young adult right now who was going through high school through COVID. And so that breakout and freedom and independence and challenging rules and stretching your limits was incredibly contained. And so the developmental process was somewhat altered, halted, and changed significantly. And so the ability to be self-aware that has been stunted somewhat because of the inability to test limits. And so I think it's conversation. I think it's also being able to listen and trust other people to give you feedback or to have people that you can check in with. I feel like I'm really forgetful. I feel like I'm losing my mind. I've lost my keys all the time. Do I seem more stressed? Do I seem more edgy? What is it like to live with me? And just kind of getting some feedback can be really helpful too, because we're somewhat stir crazy. It's gotten better, with some of the regulations lifting, but there's been some residual. And I think there can be, some people use that time to be more self-aware, and some people use that time to get more busy. And some people also use that time to unplug and go numb and get overwhelmed. So it's different for different people.
Yeah. So it sounds like asking the people around you might be important and probably really scary. I'm thinking of a time I asked for good and bad feedback. I don't know if it's good. Bottom line was I wanted the things that they saw positive and I wanted the things that they perceived as negative so that I could take a look at myself. And it was really interesting hearing and seeing what they had to say about the things that they did not like about me, and or things they didn't see as helpful in me. You know, so that can be scary, I think, on both sides sometimes. You know, can I be honest with this person when I tell them I'm struggling, you know, or are they going to have a huge temper tantrum because I'm sharing with them something I'm worried about in them? There's that huge dynamic right there.
Mm-hmm. It is. And so it's important for you to feel safe and do that only with people who are trusted and, you know, care about you and have your best interest at heart. And so safety actually is the core essential component for us to be able to come out of stress, is to feel safe and secure. And a lot of the things that we have had historically have been, you know, safety. And quite frankly, everything always has changed, but so much so at once, and this universal change, and then not to be triggered or activated by other people's behavior is also really important. And to also be really, really kind. And that's why that self-compassion is super important, because you have a choice about how much you value somebody's opinion. You know, it's really building that strength of knowing yourself and what's really important to you. And there are some things that people will give me feedback about, and it's like, yeah, that's just not that important to me. That's just not on my value radar. But how you felt when you were with me, that feels really important. And when I get feedback that is difficult for me to hear, I usually like to take it in and always thank someone, because sometimes it takes a lot of courage, you know, to give somebody feedback. And the other thing that I know is, just because of this stress and trauma being activated, you know, COVID is traumatic for all of us. A pandemic is trauma. So we're universally all going through it. And so when that happens, our window of tolerance, our ability to cope, our ability to, you know, respond and not have the temper tantrum or not completely withdraw and isolate, has been narrowed. Mm-hmm. And so to know that more people are going to be activated, and to take in that feedback and go, oh, I think that that informed me about how maybe I might be able to do this better next time. And I've learned that from my students and from my patients alike, where it's like, this is how it made me feel, or this is what this experience was like, or I'm not sure I'm going to be able to work with you. And I think it's reasonable right now that all of us get some feedback like that right now, because there's a lot that's going on that's not really conscious. And what I tell people universally is, thank you so much, because it's going to help me be a better practitioner. It's going to help me be a better educator. I try to use this with my daughter. It helps me be a better mom. It helps me be a better partner. The more that I know, especially in dealing with you one-on-one, especially in those important, intimate relationships that we have. Okay. And then I get to decide how true it is for me and how I can show up, and then ask for that feedback later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a really good recommendation once, is to fit the names of the people that I want to take their opinion on the size of a postage stamp. And you can't, you know, like, write. So what that means is two or three people.
Yeah.
And that'll help guide you. Those are your core people that you trust, and they'll help guide you, and then work through the noise. Trust your intuition. Yeah.
Okay. So I have a couple of things here. I want to talk about, if someone's experienced trauma in a relationship or maybe emotional abuse or something like that, how do they determine who safe people are? Because it seems to me, when I talk to some of those people, like, they're going to the person who is not safe and asking for feedback. And then also, if we could talk a little bit about what noise is.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a trauma therapist, but what's really important is that we can be incredibly skewed with what feels like normal. I'm going to just put that in quotes, and none of us are normal. So what I want to do is tell you the core components of compassion are, you're not alone. Okay. There's other people just like you experiencing similar things, very much like you. There's no one just like you, but you are not alone with your experience. And then secondly is, when you're suffering, whatever that might look like, whether it be you know, some form of abuse or some form of neglect, whatever it might be, is that suffering is a universal human experience. Okay. And the word suffering is kind of nice because it's not attached to all these other labels, like you're a depressed person or anxious person, which may also have connotations in our own brain, being rejected or judged or whatever. And then thirdly, is the most important thing to kind of get to over and over and over again in practice is being kind to yourself, that you're going to, no matter what, is that you're going to be kind to yourself. And I think it's this taking deep breaths and getting yourself calm and really figuring out what that is. It may be a walk. The recommendations are things like getting fresh air, getting in nature, spending time with animals that make you feel loved and cared about, people that you make you feel loved and cared about, things that have a way in which you can kind of go, oh yeah, I can kind of lose track of time. This calms my nervous system. My breathing slows down. So how we know physically is our breathing slows down, our heart rate slows down, our blood pressure slows down. And so we have physiological responses. And so what I think is important is to pay attention to whether it's internal, like this isn't really safe, or this doesn't feel quite right, or as a result of taking care of this person or doing this, I had this happen, or taking that feedback from other people and just kind of start adding them up over time. And what I like about typically in working with people is they typically know their set of issues. And what's nice is they have their set of issues and they're not my issues or your issues or anyone. And so we're kind of grappling with those for the rest of our life. Mm-hmm. And so people over time start to, one, they figured out ways to cope. So to really emphasize those strengths is super important. What worked before, so you can see yourself get through another thing, but also how is this impacting you and how is this keeping you from being able to sleep at night or, you know, whatever's most important to you. And that's key too, you know, being able to get the job you want, being able to move to the place that you want, being able to see the people you want to see, do the things that you want to do, take care of your body in the way you want to take care of your body. And those are the types of questions I love that you have. Stay curious in the background. It's like, be really curious. Like, I wonder how life could be better. I wonder what this is like. And then seek people who are inspirational. So I think to get to your question, when people around you are not safe, I think believing that there is somebody out there potentially that's safe. And what the research has shown is that it's one person. It only takes one person, and it could be a teacher. It could be your doctor. It could be your neighbor. It could be somebody that you meet on a bus, you know? And so I think it's that taking that deep breath and keep moving forward and keep believing and staying open and reaching out for help. And that is one beautiful thing of COVID right now. And what we've been through is that there's a lot more resources and there's a lot more public education. And I know around mental health, isolate, you know, some of these risks, and I know we could do way better and we could argue that it's way too late, but I'm feeling hopeful that it's touching more people. And again, that whole, you're not alone, you know, a lot of people, you know, everyone's been touched by this trauma.
Yeah. So it sounds like to bring it back to the self and really look inside, how am I feeling when I'm around this person? Is this making sense? Do I get confused? Asking questions like that as far as safe. Now, when you were talking about getting feedback, even if you get it from a safe person, is what I heard you say. It's like, even if you get it from a safe person, there's going to be noise. What do you mean by noise?
Is that, you know, you're dealing with all their stuff too. Okay. So it's, you know, whenever you have two people interacting, am I catching you on a good day? Am I catching you when you're grounded? Or are you reacting to me in your stuff, you know? And so what you want to do is take it in and say, is this true? Is this really true? How much does this matter? And if it weren't true, would it matter? And if it is true, would it matter? And so for the things that are really important and they hit your values and they hit what's most important to you, I think it's important to, you know, let it go through, breathe, don't react, sit with it for a while, play with it. You could solicit more. And you can put things on a shelf, you know, and say, I can come back to this later. And so I think you can also come back to that person later and say, can you tell me more about that? Again, when you're calm and you're feeling connected and you feel open and you feel like it's a safe time. I think journaling can be super helpful for people. I think taking walks and sitting with the question, but I think relaxing and giving things more time and space. And I know a lot of us feel like we can't do that because there's so much need and so much demand. But I think the more that you can do that, the more what's most important and what's true will rise to the surface, what needs to be attended to.
Yeah, I think that's true because I'll never forget, I'm not sure. I hope I don't forget, but the first time that I took that much needed break instead of pushing through. Yeah. And then everything just went that. It wasn't like I was fighting against what was going to happen next and kind of spinning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how does this help with, you know, nutrition and things like that? How does trauma impact, you know, you are the no more food trauma person. So how does that all connect?
You know, food is essential for life. So it's essential need. And now we're seeing it being threatened. It's always been threatened around the world, but it's being threatened in such, you know, it's so extensive right now with food accessibility and balance and nutrition. And so the messaging from a very young age, and then the relationship that the family has with food and money and accessing food and security and being able to feed bodies, I would say, and the messaging from the media, and even the messaging from someone like myself, a healthcare professional or a teacher around nutrition, can be so impactful about our relationship with food, how we take care of ourselves, and how we grow and learn, you know, and being able to be responsive to our body. And so one thing that I think that's been most impactful around trauma is that we can disconnect from our bodies and not listen to it. So then we disconnect from, am I hungry? Am I full? How much do I need? Is this good for me? Bad for me? And being forced to eat, being forced to be restricted, having food insecurity in the family, which is affecting so many people right now. And then also really food deserts, not having, being able to go to the grocery store, not having refrigeration, having a mom who restricts themselves, who judges you, who judges your food, body shames, or a dad, it could be an uncle. It could be one comment in a really important time period while
it could, yeah, it could be changing.
Yeah.
It could be a coach or a teacher or a friend at school. Yep. If in the teen years, maybe it could be,
yes,
I'm just trying boyfriend, to think. Usually girl. Not. Well, it actually, it could probably also be a stranger. Yep. Who you overhear, and maybe they're not talking about you, but you take it as them. They were talking about you. I'm just trying to think of all the potential possibilities. Like that's a lot.
It is a lot. And to try to get back to, I don't know how my body feels, and our bodies change, right? So when you're pregnant and when you're lactating and when you're going through adolescence and when you're going through menopause, you know, what our bodies need and what works in our bodies and what makes us feel best is very, very different. And the thing about trauma and stress with nutrition is that rest and digest go together. And so I can't tell you how many people say, I have huge digestive problems, and many have huge stress problems and have a digestive problem as a result. And just being mindful and being able to relax your body, just like what you did when you opened the show and took a couple deep breaths and got centered, that is a great way to start a meal. That is a great way to start preparing a meal. But if we learned that we needed to clean the plate, that that this is all you get for this meal, that we don't have more, even though you're still hungry, even though you're growing, that you learn to distrust yourself. And one of the things that we see is then when food becomes available, then the speed of eating and the amount of eating, like all of us have experienced at some point a time where we've gone too long without eating, or that we didn't plan well. And then we get around food again and we're eating faster because we're really hungry, and we should eat faster when we're hungry. We all do. And then we eat more because of that fear and how, and try to get out of that pain of being so hungry.
I call it inhaling.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll inhale a book too, but you know, food is different kinds of inhaling, right? So a book I'll read really fast, but sometimes with the food, it's just all of a sudden it's gone. It's like, where did that go?
Yeah.
To my tummy. Yeah. I love that you said we all do that. That, yeah. It, you know, because I think too, there's that individual idea of I'm the only one who does this. You know, you look around and no one else is maybe as hungry as you are, but all of a sudden you're, at least for me, I'm judging myself based on everybody else and how fast I ate instead of slowing down. So, okay. So if someone has, they're in that situation where maybe they're just starting to notice they aren't really familiar with how their body feels when it comes to food and food trauma and things like that. Or maybe they've, like you said earlier, maybe they've had trauma which came into food, or they were traumatized with food. It sounds like it can go so many different ways. What would be the top three tips or tools that you would say, maybe think about this now?
Yeah. So where we're starting at really matters. So some of the people that I work with have gotten down to only one safe food that they're eating. So
one safe food, is that what you said? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if that's the case, then we'd want to look at variety. And some people, it is just getting them to eat it all. Okay. Some people, it's skipping a large amount of meals. So it's going to be variety and balance, and really going with what's most important to you right now, and what do you see yourself being able to succeed with? Mm-hmm. You know, so somebody might say, I know that fresh fruits right now taste really good, and I remember loving fresh fruits, but I'm scared to eat them because of whatever reason. And so starting with one that you remember, and an amount and a way in which, again, you can feel as safe as possible so that you can see yourself following through with it. And so baby steps are huge with any behavior change for success, so that you don't overwhelm and you don't get this backlash that then for all of us, if we overate any food, we're going to have an issue. What we want to do, and for any of us, if we really believe that we're going to get something really bad's going to happen when we eat something, we're going to solicit that reaction in our body. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is set it up and actually visualize and really believe that this is going to go really well, and to stay curious and to stay open to experimentation. And so what you want to do is just ask all the questions in which you can set up an environment and a space in which someone can see themselves succeed with the experiment. And then being really supportive that the outcome is not the goal. The process of learning and understanding is the goal, and seeing that you can try something and be okay. That's the main thing.
I love that you called it an experiment. So it's not, oh, this is what we're going to do. Well, it is, this is what we're going to do. And it's also an experiment. So if it doesn't go well, that's okay. And I can just be curious about what I learned throughout the process. And even if I get to the end of my little food experiment, if you will, and it didn't go well, then I could just make a new choice or create another experiment to try next time. And again, stay curious. And I really love how you pointed out taking those breaths before the meal, because I mean, even me, when I sit down, I don't think to a meal. I do it on the podcast, right? I'll take those few breaths. I'll introduce us. I'll center myself before I introduce us. I don't do that when I sit down. And
isn't
that funny?
It is.
I think most people don't anymore.
No, and we've devalued and devalued the time that it takes to prepare and eat a meal. It's like, I'm really mad that I have to take a lunch break. You know, we're prioritizing other things, but it'd be really good just to ask you, so why do you take the deep breaths before the podcast?
It helps me relax and just listen better.
So wonderful. And if you don't, then the podcast, it might not feel so great. You might not feel great during the podcast because you're not as centered and it's harder to stay in tune with your guest, you know, so it could be an outcome that you're not really wanting. But why would you want to do this job if you're not relaxed? So it's this idea of, you know, anything, any activity, if we could be more grounded and mindful and present, especially for the stuff that we're wanting to enjoy and we're wanting to be in tune with, and so that our life, we're not missing our life, that we're really present with our life. And so if we love this food, when we put it in our mouth, we really want to taste our food. And we all get to have meals where we're like, I just have to have this meal so I can get to the next thing. We all have times where it's like, this is the only food available. Fine, I'll eat it. And then and we'll all survive as long as it doesn't have serious foodborne illness stuff in it and get to the other side. We're good to go. And so to see that again, it's temporary and it's not the end all be all, but when I do have the privilege of having choice, which again, that's a big part of trauma, is that we don't have choice much of the time. A lot of people don't have that privilege, is then I'm going to make this count. I'm going to take the time and take care of my body and my digestion. But you're not alone. I don't think most people do, but it's a really nice connection to make if there are digestive or bodily issues related to food, or a belief that you don't tolerate a food, or food's not good for you, or that you can't enjoy your food. I think it's worth the time and energy and effort.
Yeah, what a great thing to leave the listeners with, to take those few breaths and center themselves. I mean, and all of the other tools, but I'm really closing out with this deep feeling of, I'm going to be taking deep breaths before I eat my next meal and hopefully my next one and make it a new habit. This is going to be a fun experiment.
Yeah, and a lot of people like doing that with gratitude. You know, that was that whole idea of saying, you know, having a little grace or appreciating the people who prepare the food or whatever, that is really helpful for stress and trauma too, is to bring up a sense of gratitude. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Kathleen Putnam, for coming on this show. You can find her at nomorefoodtrauma.com. As you can tell, super easy to talk to, very open, and just a lot of fun. So thanks again for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey everyone, Angela Talent here, host of the Relatively Damaged podcast. I'm the author of Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent. As you may know, Cicero once said, a room without books is like a body without a soul. Well, I say a soul without poetry hasn't lived. Buy my book on Amazon, Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent. Do you feel like a meditation failure? I know I did until I tried the iOS Breath and Heart app put together by the good people over at the Institute for Applied Meditation. I kept hearing about the benefits of meditation and was frustrated because I just couldn't sit there noticing my breath for any length of time. Thank goodness there's more than one type of meditation. I'm so glad this worked for me. Will it work for you? I don't know. Download the app and try it out. Breath and Heart. From I Am Heart. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Relatively Damaged by Damaged Parents. We really enjoyed talking to Kathleen about how she pointed out support systems can be difficult to access. We especially liked when she reminded us that there are others experiencing similar struggles. We are not alone. To unite with other damaged people, connect with us on Instagram. Look for Damaged Parents. We'll be here next week, still relatively damaged. See you then.